Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we welcome back the amazing actor, writer, director, producer, Chris Lemon. And he's going to talk about his play, and we're going to talk about life and issues and all that wonderful stuff. Hi, Chris.
Hiya, Sherry.
Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me again. You're terrific. I had so much fun last time, and you meet how many people ended up seeing it? I was really kind of phenomenal.
It was over a million. It was like something like, I can't even remember now, but it was a lot. It was like 4 or 5 million people.
That's incredible. Good for you. Congratulations on such a successful show. And thanks so much for having me back.
I'm really excited to have you back because you're so much fun.
I do my best.
Do you want to start by talking about bringing Twist of Lemon to England?
Oh, yeah. That's right. All that stuff's happened in between the time we talked. It was a pretty scary thing for me because I'd worked so hard on this for so many years. It really is kind of my magnum opus, as we discussed last time. And England can be a bit tough on us Yanks. So it was really kind of the acid test. It was going to be England or New York. New York will be next. But it was just a dream come true. I really, truly was a very appreciative Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. It was a sold out run. We got all 4 and 5 star reviews, and most importantly, the audiences were just so supportive. I love playing smaller houses in this, and obviously from a business standpoint, we wanted to specifically target a smaller house because we needed to be a sold out run in order for it to be a success. And I ended up stumbling into one of the greatest small houses in the West End, the St. James Theater's studio downstairs. And we started out sold out with, they have 90 seats, I believe it was. And then the next week it went to 110 seats. And by the time we finished, I think against all fire marshal rules, we were 130 seats with standing room only in the back. It's really going to remain one of the wonderful experiences of my life.
How did they relate to it? Was it that the father and son? Was it you reflecting on your dad's career? What was it that they related, or what did they relate to all of it?
Well, it's interesting because it is a colloquial piece. I mean, Jack Lemmon was a very colloquial actor, and there's a lot of stuff like pull yourself together. Everybody, people are talking, and I was worried that they just wouldn't get that kind of Americana humor. But at its core, you know, this is a very universal story. It's not just a story about Jack and Chris Lemmon. It's a story. Oh, notice I gave myself top billing there. Should I say Chris and Jack Lemmon? What can I tell you? It's really a story about a father and a son, and at its core, a fairly tragic one. You know, I mean, it's about a father and a son who, for various reasons, divorce, career, all that stuff, are pulled apart at a very early age, but who made the conscious choice to come back together, ended up becoming the very best of friends, my father and I. At the end of his life, which ended tragically short at the age of 76, but at the same time, it's couched in that lore from the golden age of Hollywood. That wonderful era where we were just talking about this pre-interview when we were chatting. That era of innocence, that golden age of Hollywood, Camelot, as Jack says during the course of the narrative. Which will never exist again. It was a very special time, and I think it's immediately identifiable to anybody watching the show Even if you don't know that much about it, it still is. And it's always fascinating as I, you know, do the dance with the audience every night. There is no performance like the one-person performance. It's the listening factor is huge between me and the audience. And I can feel, you know, I can feel what they're thinking. And you know, we're doing that tango. And when we get into those times and what you know happened during those times, those incredibly exciting and young and wonderful times, it really is a turn on for them. And so anyway, to answer your question in typically long lemon form, it was just delightful. I was worried about doing London. If we failed, that's it. That's the end of the show. I found it to be just as receptive to humor I didn't know if they'd get as American audiences, which really thrilled me.
When we talked, you had just done America. Did you do any other countries other than England, or did you just stick to the West End?
We were down in New Zealand, Australia, Tasmania, doing a cruise ship line, which was a real trip, and popping performances here and there. So I've actually can say that I've played half the world at this point.
That's cool.
Yeah, it really is. Australia to England, and a lot of places in between. But it's all been everything up until London. Quite honestly, was preparatory. It's been a wonderful ride. It's been so you know what I'm saying. From England to Australia and America, we've been going for about a year and a half now. But all of that has been preparation for what I considered the first real performance, which was London. That's when the show finally came of age. These things, crafting this type of theater, is enormously difficult. It is that most perilous form of performance, the one person performance, the tightrope walk at the end of the circus big tent, and if you fall, you're dead. So the only way really to get it is to do it in front of people. And so I flew under the radar purposely for all of these performances up until now in order to try new material, get things work much like a stand-up comedian would, but this isn't that. This isn't cabaret. This
right.
is theater. And the only way to do it, you can't sit in front of a word processor and think, oh, hey, I got it. You've got to get it in front of people, and you've got to listen to them. As I say, that ultimate form of listening, that dance, that invisible dance that happens between the audience and the performer, more so in one person performance than any other arena I know of. So all of those wonderful places I played, all of the wonderful things that reviewers have said, thank you so much. Up until now, it's really all been preparatory. London was the first performance. I actually remodeled the entire show just for London, putting it in intermission and making it a two-act show because, of course, they want that what they call an interval, so everybody will go over to the bar and but it added 25 minutes worth of new material, and a lot of that happened up at a small, great little theater up in Rochester, New York, called the Downstairs Cabaret, where they were Chris Kowalski and Anne Marie Sanders were sweet enough to allow me to experiment with all of this new material, and it originally was a one act show. It resulted in the two act version and 20 minutes worth of new material, 25 minutes worth of new material, that from pacing alone ended up being performed in 10 minutes. And the Londoners, this guy is so rapid fire, Jack. You know, I do the whole thing with the voice of my father. He's such a rapid fire guy. They just adored the pace of it. They were on every word. And all of those crazy, what are you nuts hanging out of the window, colloquialisms, they loved them. So it really was a thrill, and I think you know, it, pretty much any English-speaking audience is going to get it. And hey, listen, maybe it would translate to other languages and, you know, get some other performers out there playing Jack. That would be kind of fun. Maybe see it in German.
Yeah.
What a trip. And there's actually been interest from Germany in doing exactly that. We're in the middle of negotiations right now. So all of it's, you know, it's all so really incredibly exciting to have been able to take this personal voyage of mine and create a message that I really felt, I feel such great joy in sharing, and because it has touched so many people that have come to me and said that. And it's, you know, we actors, so many times we have to sell stuff we don't believe in. And to have a message that I have, you know, that I incepted, if there's such a word, that I wrote, that I created, and, you know, that has become this in my life at this point in my career has been enormously rewarding. So in any case, you know, we Lemons will do 30 minutes on Hello. That's my way of saying thank you. Thank you so much to London.
What was your dad's a legend, and I mean, he did some of the great classics like Some Like It Hot and A Great Race, but what was the age range of the people coming to see it? Was it mostly people our age, or was it younger people? Who was coming?
No, that's a great question, and first of all, thank you. That's a lovely compliment that you can say people our age, meeting you and me. Yeah, well, you know, you're a lovely young gal, and I'm a big old fart. So, you know, it's a really good question. Yes, of course, the demographic is fairly clear. It's going to be, you know, most of the typical audience is going to be people who know Jack Lemmon, know Marilyn Monroe, know Jimmy Cagney, know Gregory Peck, George Cukor, these, oh, God, these giants. But one of my favorite is when kids come. As a matter of fact, my son, my youngest boy is at Trinity College right now here in Connecticut. I love it. It's a great school. And he rose on the crew team. And one of the gals who graduated last year, so I would, you know, be 22, I think, 21, 22, she and four or five of her friends happened to be in London. They said, we'd love to come see your play. And I said, I would love to have you. So, you know, we brought him in and sat him down, and it's a, you know, again, it's an intimate venue. This is basically, don't let me forget where we are right now. So I digress for 2 seconds. You have to understand that what this is Jack Lemmon. Before the play begins, Jack Lemmon, I do the play in my father's voice, as I said, has gone to see his doctor, and his doctor's told him he has 3 months to live. And so what Jack has done is that he's assembled all of his best friends, the audience, sat them down in his living room over a cup of coffee, and decided he's going to tell them his life story. And during the telling of that story, he stumbles across his relationship with his son, me, and brings it full circle. So it's delivered directly to the audience. I look into your eyes and tell you, you know, you, the audience, tell you this story. So that's where that, what I call listening, that dance between you and I happens. And so I start up to play, and I'm seeing them. I can see them, and, you know, sitting in their little seats. They're so cute. And and I can feel what they're thinking, which is like, what the heck is this? who are these people he's talking about? What is this era he's talking about? But as things started to progress, it's not that they knew who, I mean, of course, everybody knows who Marilyn is, I believe, but do they know who George Cukor is, or Jimmy Cagney, or for that matter, Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau? Maybe not, but they knew what they were, and they knew it was such a clearly delineated time and era and place and thing during Hollywood's golden age. They knew what it was all about, and you know, as we got 5 or 10 minutes into it, I could just see them lean forward in their seats and go, wow, that's who these people are. And this is what they're up to. And it such, and I see it happen a lot with younger, I love younger audiences, and I love talking to them afterwards and getting what they have to say, and seeing them get what the point of this whole story is about, which is a story of a parent and a child and their mm-hmm. journey through life. You know, it really is one of the most amazing stories there is. In this case, it's him and me. But, you know, we all have this journey, and I try to keep all the bumps in the road. We're all human, as Jack says at the end of the first act. We're all human. We all make mistakes. But if we can understand that about each other, we can rise above, and we can resurrect relationships that may be broken or have deeper appreciation for relationships that are beautiful, making them even more beautiful. So it was just so wonderful to see their reactions to it. And sure enough, we were just at one of Jonathan's regattas last week, and she was there, and she came over and gave me about a half hour on it. And, you know, what can I tell you? I was just beaming from ear to ear to listen to this 22-year-old gal say how much she enjoyed the show. So there we go.
That is really good. That's good. I mean, to me, when I was a kid, when I was growing up, even though a lot of the legends were gone, a lot of the legends were still around. I mean, when I turned on TV, I could see Merv Griffin with Cary Grant. I mean, they were still here.
What a great Merv. I love Merv. he was very dear. I actually had lots of I worked with Merv a number of times. What a great guy he was. Anyways, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. What I'm just trying to say is, even though he wasn't acting anymore, I knew exactly who he was, and I knew who all the older legends were, like, you know, Katharine Hepburn and Henry Fonda. But today, it's like if it's before 2000, they don't know that these people existed. And I think it's great, anybody who spreads the word about classic Hollywood, and then you deliver this great thing about you and your dad on top of it. I mean, to me, what you did is brilliant. I mean, I can't even say enough to say how happy I am that you created it.
Well, you're very, very sweet. I think, you know, and there's a lot of undercurrent of this. It's in the book, too, which is where the play came from. For those who didn't hear the first interview, it grew out of a search for catharsis, and I wrote down my memories of my father, and that became a book, and the book became a book tour, and then an album, and then finally this play. But I more clearly point at it in the play, I think, than I do in the book, that it really is also about an era of innocence, which is slowly disappearing. We were chatting about this in the first interview, and also just before I came, we started the show. It's really, do we all lose the lion's share of our innocence? We're all born innocent as we matriculate into society. Well, of course we do. But is society losing its innocence at an ever-increasingly rapid pace as we enter into this era of instant communication? I think the answer is, of course, it
is. Yeah.
And, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I would imagine that you know, three generations ago, they were pretty much saying sort of the same kind of thing, you know, about their time. But I think it's happening more clearly now. And, hey, listen, nothing against all of this, you know, the incredible stuff, you know, the fact that if something happens in Tibet, you see it 3 seconds later, you know, that you can pretty much, you know, YouTube pretty much anything or Google anything. It is what it is, but that kind of that ever-accelerating loss of innocence that's going on right now means that I can kind of look back with a little bit at that wonderful time.
Nostalgia.
It really was. Nostalgia, yeah, with the golden age of Hollywood. As Jack says, it was the year of innocence. It was the golden age of Hollywood. It was Camelot. And that's what Los Angeles was back in the 60s and 70s. and that really it kind of got lost in the 80s when I think, and I hope I'm not insulting anybody by saying this, that the men of vision for whatever, you know, whether they were good or bad, the Louis B. Mayers and the Sam Baldwins, you know, the studios were taken over by, you know, Coca-Cola, Sony, and so on and so forth. You know, are they, you know, it's interesting because take a look at TV right now. I think TV is really experiencing a renaissance right now, and a lot of it has to do with these renegade young studios that have now become really established, Netflix and HBO and so on. And they're doing some, and consequently so are the networks, in my opinion, doing some really good stuff. But what's kind of happening on the movie front right now, the big studio movie front? It's interesting. Anyway.
All the things that are getting nominated are independent films because the studios are doing repeats, basically, of old stuff.
Well, they're doing, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't mean to get kind of political with all of this. You know, that's not, I'm certainly by no means any kind of an expert in this area. But, you know, they're doing what they have to do in order to draw people away from their home entertainment systems and this incredible stream of entertainment coming through their televisions and get them to come to movies, which I believe really has to kind of boil down to spectacle. It's really, you know, it's got to be something that, you know, I want to see this in a movie theater. I want to sit there with the Dolby sound and the big screen and, you know, and the big cushy chair and watch something that just isn't as effective at home. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I'm just sort of, you know, the parlor talk.
I don't know. I just think that I'd like to see some originality instead of taking something, you know, another I Spy or another thing of T.J. Hooker or something. And don't get me wrong,
well,
I love
what?
The originals.
I'll go out on a limb here. Maybe I'm making a fool out of myself. But there was one feature release that's sort of the brand that I thought was damn good, which was the Marvel Comics, the film Deadpool. Did you see
it? No, I haven't seen it. I heard about it, but it's supposed to be really good.
I thought it was really good. I actually watched it twice.
I don't know anything about it.
I may have just made a complete fool out of myself, and I thought Ryan Reynolds was terrific. I thought it was a very good film.
I love Ryan Reynolds.
It's fun. he's a terrific actor. It's just good fun, you know. Go have fun, watch the movie, walk out with a smile. I think that what you're saying may be true. We want something that's a little more thought of evoking, and that's kind of let me in typical actor form pull the conversation back to me about me. That's what I really am hoping that I'm doing with you know, what's going on here. Yeah, what's the famous old line, enough about me, what did you think of my last film? it's taken me, this has actually been amazingly a 15-year-long journey since my father died, a 10-year journey since I published the book. To turn it into what it is now. And it all revolves, as Chris says, Chris comes out in the beginning when I turn into Jack. As Chris says, the one question I was asked more than any other as I was growing up was, what is it like to be Jack Lemmon's son? And that question led me on a lifelong journey of discovery. And if you think about it, it's a nutty question for any kid to have to answer about any parent. What is it like to be your parent's child? It's actually a very, that simple little question, it's a very big question. And it's led to what I consider to be some very important things that we all think about. I'll give you a quick story, and I swear to God I'll make it quick even though I'm a lemon. I may have told this on the first chat we had. But when I was, you know, during this whole experimental developmental phase that I've been doing for the last year or so, I did a performance, and one of the reviewers actually came to the theater the next day while we were teching, came to me and said, I've got to tell you something. After watching your show last night, my father and I split. We haven't spoken to each other in years. We actually ended up hating each other and splitting enemies. And after watching your show last night, I've decided I want to go find him and see if we can't pull things back together, which, you know, and I was so deeply touched by hearing that. Well, sure enough.
That's beautiful.
Get this. A few months later, I'm doing a show all the way across the country. I think it was down in Florida or something like that, thousands of miles away. And I walk out afterwards, and there he is, with big tears streaming down his face, and he gives me a big hug, and he says, I found him. I found my father. He was down here in Orlando. And we patched things up, and we've become the very best of friends. And I thank God that I found him, because he doesn't have long to live. And so I moved down here to be with him for his final days. And, you know, you think, why am I doing what I'm doing? You know, yes, is it exciting as a professional to be able to do this most difficult form of theater? Is it wonderful to be able to incorporate my writing, my acting, my music, and bring them all together into this? But really, what's it all about, Alfie? And, you know, that is what it's all about, and to have that kind of a reaction. My father once said, if you can touch just one person, you've done your job. And to be able to have something like that happen because of the message I'm trying to bring, you know, then that makes me feel really good. I mean, is Deadpool a good movie? Yeah, absolutely. It's fun to see this guy, you know, do his quips and his jokes and his this and his that. But, you know, something that can – well, now I'm giving myself a big indirect pat on the back, aren't I? You get what I'm saying. You know, I don't want to be
– that's cool.
You know.
I think that's true, though. I think that bringing somebody some resolution to their life, even from the side, sort of, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's a gift, and you should be patting yourself on the back. That's just
amazing. It really has been. And you know, it was wonderful because we got that in London too. I had people after the show. I love to have a little chat with the audience after the show sometimes, and you know, and saying that too, and you know, it makes me hope. And what I tried to do was find a universal message, and so far, you know, well, it's worked for it's worked for Australia and England, and so, you know, we'll see. Hey, Canada's next. You're next.
So where are you going in Canada?
I'm actually taking a little break right now. After the success in London, you know, which was so enormously rewarding, I'm you know, stepping back. We're going to regroup. We're going to, you know, rebuild the team, and we're going to shoot New York in spring. I haven't got the venue yet, but we will be in New York in spring, and that's the second part of the two-part acid test. We did London. We came away with a success. If I can do the same thing or something close in New York, then we've done it. And that's when I was going to start. I think for 2017, we're going to do a five-city tour. I haven't picked the five cities yet, but they will include Miami, Chicago, Los Angeles, and two others. I haven't decided which two yet. But one may be Ontario and maybe Dallas. I'm not sure. That'll be 2017, and then 2018 we'll be doing the whole, you know, a big tour.
That is so cool. Are you excited that something that started as just something for you to get through your loss of your father has become this grand, like you said, magnum opus?
Well, the crazy thing is, after a year plus worth of work and performing, I'm just beginning. London was the beginning. It was the first show. In that aspect, it's so very exciting, you know, because those places where I have played, even though I did play smaller theaters and flew, quote-unquote, under the radar, we will be playing more prominent venues and hopefully attracting, you know, it's so very exciting to know that I'm going to bring the show that was so well received in Los Angeles, say, and bringing back a completely different iteration of that show to Los Angeles. So even though you'll be seeing the show that was there before, you'll be seeing a whole new version of it. And I think that's really enormously exciting. We've sort of proven our track record at this point, and have played a tough town like London. Believe me, if they don't like it, they let you know. And God bless them for it. You know, they're an enormously discerning theatrical audience, and we came away with this wonderful success. So it really enervates me to bring it back and do it again. As my father used to say, do it again for the first time. So this is really what I want to do right now. I mean, I love acting. I love everything about it, movies, TV, all that stuff. But this is my message. This is something I created from scratch, and it all started, you know, Lodos many years ago, with a blank page. And as I wrote, this wonderful world opened up, and all those incredible characters. I have a little guest house out behind my house that serves as my office, and I used to love getting up in the morning and walking back here with my coffee and seeing all these crazy characters leaning out the windows yelling, "Come write me, come write me." And now it's turned into this, where I get to perform them all. For those of you who didn't hear the first interview, the whole show is done in my father's voice, but my father, in telling his life story, visits with, 60-plus other crazy characters from that era, Billy Wilder and Marilyn Monroe and so on and so forth, Walter Matthau, of course. So I do all those other characters as well. It's not an imitation of my father. It has to be a channeling. Otherwise, it's not honest. It's not an honest performance. And from what I've been told, I achieved that. But in visiting all of these other characters and in telling the story, Jack imitates all of them. Not imitates, but tells stories about them and some parts of that in their voices. So all those 60-plus other characters, it's not me doing them. It's Jack doing them. And it's a trip, you get what I'm saying to you.
Yeah. My next question is sort of selfish. Are you going to be doing it on film at some point? So some of us who can't see it on stage will get to see it.
Oh yeah. I would absolutely love to. We haven't signed any deals yet. There's been some interest. But, to do this for PBS or HBO as a special would be, a dream come true. That's what we're shooting for. But I think I'm going to have to wait and see what my general manager has to say about that and my management. They're much smarter about timing on things like that. But I would think that we want to go ahead and do the substantial tour first. Before we do that, I know that's what Carrie Fisher did, and I think she ran her show extremely well before she did her special. Let's go ahead and get 2017, 2018. Let me get it out there live, and then we'll think about that.
Okay, we've come to the end. We're a little over, but that's okay. I put in the extra time. Do you have anything that you want to add, that you want to tell the fans about either your show or anything upcoming or anything before we end the show?
Well, I've had a marvelous time, and I've worked with a number of really wonderful and very talented people, during the course of this whole development phase of the show. And it's been a magnificent experience for me, both professionally, artistically, and spiritually, to take this journey with this show. But what it really boils down to in the very end are the audiences. And I want to really thank everyone who has been so supportive of the show and have come out, you know, and seen it some more than once, some numerous times. It's just so wonderful, the theater. There is nothing like the theater, because there they are right in front of you, and you get to act for them. And the reactions that I've gotten while I do that dance from my audience members have been literally spiritual for me. I adored my father. He was a wonderful man, and I was devastated when he left. And, you know, it's so wonderful to perform this because I really truly feel like he's back with me for those 90 minutes I'm on stage. And to look out into that sea of faces and see them looking back up at me and giving me this wonderful energy. Basically, in my long-winded lemon fashion, I'm just saying my biggest thank you goes out to the wonderful audiences all across the world that I've had the pleasure of performing for. And there you go.
Well, I think that's beautiful. When we first chatted, I think I told you how much of a fan I am, both you and your father. I love both your performance. I've seen all of both your movies. Grew up watching your dad and also later on watching you. So that you've reached this point in your career is so beautiful, and I'm so happy for you. Congratulations.
Well, I'm a huge fan of yours, too. I think you're terrific.
Thank you. You're very sweet.
Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, Sherry.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Like I said, we're a little over time, so I wanted to thank you for coming on the show again. I really appreciate it. You're always so much fun, and I adore you.
Well, you're a doll for having me, and congratulations on all your success. You're just doing terrifically, so keep up the good work, kiddo.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You betcha.
And thank you for chatting with Sherry.